Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Business of Cyber. I'm excited to introduce my next guest, David McCaw. David is the RVP of Prisma Cloud of the Americas Business Unit at Palo Alto Networks, overseeing their most strategic customer relationships. Before joining Palo Alto, David was the co-founder and VP of sales at Dicera. Now, David was at Dicera at the time of our conversation, so you'll notice a couple of questions about Dicera specifically, but the lessons, recommendations, and just sort of his general approach on managing customer relationships are still just as relevant. Our conversation was a deep dive into the cybersecurity sales ecosystem with a particular focus on customer success and how David approaches fostering trusted customer relationships. So I hope you guys enjoy my conversation with David McCaw.
Well, the party is off to a good start.
David, thank you so much for joining me today. How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you, Joey?
Yeah, doing well. Well, as a way to kick us off, I'd love to maybe start with some context. So why don't you tell us maybe a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you found your way into the world of cybersecurity?
Sure. First off, I appreciate you having me on the podcast and providing me with this platform to share some of my experience. Hopefully, some of your listeners can find some valuable nuggets in it and it can make an impact. But my name is David McCaw. I lead go-to-market at an early-stage company focused on data security called Dicera. I've been in the field since 1998, so I'm going on year 25. It's been an interesting journey. I found my way into enterprise technology almost accidentally in the late 90s when we still had newspapers. As a fresh out of high school student, I found myself browsing the job section just to see what was out there and responded to an ad that ended up being for a company that did early stage software memory leak detection. So we're talking about analyzing C and C++ code to make sure that there's no memory leaks or memory corruptions, and walked in on day one, was thrown into the fire and never looked back since.
Okay. And how did that initial experience ultimately lead to you finding yourself as the co-founder and head of go-to-market at Dicera?
Sure. So it's quite an interesting experience. I'm not sure how much time you want to allocate towards that, but in the late 90s, this was early tech sales. There weren't tools out there like there are today. There wasn't even like the notion of a WebEx or a screen sharing type of system. And literally day one was walking into an office, getting a pile of paper with a bunch of names and phone numbers on it and a script and saying, hey, call these folks and just follow the script. Our software was very sophisticated. So it required modifying an engineer's basically their entire software build process. So you had to go into their make file, change their compiler, change their linker, redirect those to our compiler, run the application, and then there's no screen sharing. So we had to ask the customer on the other side, what are you seeing on the screen? And being able to determine and translate that experience to what the impact of our tool was, and help guide that towards a sale. So, the interesting thing is, we were selling to some of the largest names in technology today, but at the very earliest stages. When Amazon had less than 30 servers, they called us and we ended up selling our software to them to help them find memory-related bugs. When Sergey Brin and Larry Page were still at Stanford, they called and asked for a student discount to get access to our software because the Google prototype was crashing. And so it was the first piece of commercial software they ever purchased. And it's interesting because, you know, if you go back on the Internet Time Machine, you'll actually see on the very first landing page of Google that when it was just Larry, Sergey, and Craig, they give a shout out to our software. So you know, those were the times where you had to be really scrappy, and the organization that we were in was very much a scrappy organization, but it was also led by a visionary founder who brought the industry's first commercial static analysis product to market. He brought the industry's first commercial API testing solution to market. We were doing things around software development and improving the SDLC that, interestingly enough, we saw that cycle repeat a decade later in cyber. So the way that I ended up in cyber is, you know, I was on the very early edge of helping software development teams understand how they should apply static analysis consistently to write quality code. And how do you drive that adoption, and how do you create culture with an organization that's a combination of people, process, and technology? So when static analysis started to become, you know, foundational to application security, and CISOs were trying to figure out how to get partnership with their engineering counterparts, it's something that I had done for 10 years while everybody else was just starting new. So, obviously with security really starting to take the spotlight, I made the move into that space, had the opportunity to be what I'd say evangelical and a subject matter expert, because I was bringing in this experience that most of those folks hadn't had. And that shaped the rest of my career, which was really about not just looking at what the, you know, technology of the day is, but looking at the direction that our industry is heading, the problems that people are starting to accumulate and will need to solve, and then putting myself in the position of being an early advisor for solving those type of problems with the right companies that can bring a solution to the table.
I'm curious to understand, as you reflect back on sort of that early sales experience, right? If we can call it that, of, you know, obviously kind of transformational technology, and having the opportunity as someone, you know, early in your career to work with what would become like transformational companies like Amazon and Google. So what did you learn during those experiences that you still maybe take with you and use as like a principle of just how you do business today?
Great question. You know, there are a few things. Number one is grit and thick skin, right? So when I landed in my first role, it was before the industry got contaminated by too much of this indirect outbound type stuff, right? In fact, at that time, that was the norm, but it wasn't as egregious as it is today. People weren't getting, you know, 100 LinkedIn messages a week and 6 to 7 cold calls a day. So we had a lot of discipline in our organization. We were expected to make 100 phone calls on a daily basis. We were expected to log 3.5 hours of phone time every day. We were expected to find 2 prospects through that activity that would be interested in seeing a demo of our product. And when we're talking about demo, I'm not talking about open up Zoom and show them a demo. I'm talking about them actually going out, downloading our software, installing it, modifying their build commands, and running it on their application. And that was every day to do 2 of those demos a day. And, you know, that wasn't always possible. But when you set the bar and you get into the motion of, of understanding that every day you want to make an accomplishment. You don't want to look back at the day and say that, you know, I didn't move the needle on anything. Then that starts to define a little bit about your working style and your working habit. So I carry that philosophy that, you know, you always want to, when you go and hang up for the day, you always want to be able to look back at your day, reflect on it, and know that you moved the needle in some way or another. If you haven't, then your day's not finished, right? And that was the early lesson, you know, as both the industry matured and, I think there are a lot of other lessons that are very important that came along the way. One of them was to actually be somebody that has substance. You know, the difference between the people that were successful and the people that weren't successful were the ones that could actually act as a trusted advisor to their customers, the ones that understood well the challenges that the customers were going through and could articulate both how to solve and what the impact is, as opposed to memorizing some value props that got defined by a marketing team, but not truly understanding what those things mean. I think the customer is very savvy, and they can see through people who truly understand what they're going after in terms of solving, versus folks that are suits, but nothing underneath it, right?
Yeah, it's easy to detect when someone's just hand waving. Right. And they get a follow up question or two, and there's really, really nothing behind it.
Let me pull in my engineer. Let me pull in my CTO.
Yeah. The guy that actually knows what he's talking about.
Yep.
I really like that point as well. And I tried the previous point you made a few minutes ago. I try to remind myself of that regularly too, where it's, you know, at the end of the day, there's no worse feeling than thinking, all right, I've been busy all day today, but you can't really point to a few things that you specifically accomplished. So I like that as a lesson learned and something to reinforce all the time too. So,
yeah. Awesome. It's an important thing to do. It's very easy to be busy. But to find yourself being busy on the things that don't matter. They don't either move your business forward or, you know, as an individual rep, they don't get you any closer to your attainment. And so, yeah. You have to look at what are the big rocks that you've moved, and how does that fit into your overall plan? And if it's not happening, then, you know, that should be an indicator for self-reflection around what do I need to modify or what do I need to adapt to make sure that I can go back on every day and look at it as, you know, it was a productive day. And when I'm talking about productivity, let me shift to today's state, right? Productivity does not mean that you sent 100 cold LinkedIn messages. Productivity does not mean that, you know, you spammed a bunch of people on email or you made a bunch of dials. Like, I really believe that, especially in cyber, the perception of sales folks has taken a big hit, because there are so many companies now, there are so many salespeople that get hired. The notion of BDR and SDR that's come about in the last 10 years, which is like, you know, going back to that numbers game philosophy of let's just make dials and hit people so many times that eventually they respond. It's really soured the experience of the buyer, who, you know, should be our partner here. And, going back to what impact is, I think impact is, did you have a meaningful trust-based conversation with somebody who will impact your business? And, you know, can you take that to the next step? Can you take that to, you know, future engagement? It's not just a conversation, but actually building some trust.
So to dig into that a bit, and I'm 100% with you in what I think of as at times kind of the, you know, the hamster wheel of self-perpetuating behavior of we need more revenue, therefore we need more meetings, therefore we need to reach out to more people. And there's kind of blinders that are put on when it comes to looking at it from the customer's perspective. And you know, I think we're all aware, right, when we get cold calls in our personal lives, 95% of people just mute their phone and ignore it, right? It could be someone offering them free money, but they're just not going to pick it up if they don't trust the number, especially in the cyber world. So with that context, how do you think about kind of go to market, right, and getting attention from prospective buyers?
Yeah, great question. I think the answer to that, like most answers, you know, ends up being it depends. And mm-hmm. It depends on the size, stage, scale of the company, the maturity of the company, the brand recognition, all of those things. I think people are more inclined to respond to a marketing outreach from an organization that's got an established brand that they already are aware of or that they trust. So, sure. You know, if you're Palo Alto Networks, for example, and you see the customer receives an email from Palo Alto Networks, they're going to look at it because that brand has got to a point where they've already established trust. But if you're, you know, the next XYZ startup that nobody's heard of, then the emails and, you know, the cold LinkedIns, you know, they're going to be more of a nuisance to the customer than not. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of times the first question that I've got from folks is, you know, do we need SDRs? Do we need BDRs? I believe there's a place for them in a startup organization, but I believe that place is for supporting the marketing engine once that marketing engine has got ramped up. Meaning, if you're doing events, if you have demand gen, if you have more volume of customers who have engaged with the company, then your field team is going to be able to effectively manage. Then the SDR, the BDR becomes the backstop for that. So they're reaching out and engaging with folks that have already had exposure to the company. But on the other side of that, you know, there are these companies that we're all very familiar with that provide like lead information and targeted lead information. And in fact, I was on a call with that company last week, and, you know, for our package, they, as a courtesy, gave us annual access to cell phone numbers. And my response to him was, I hate when I get called on my cell phone from numbers that I don't know and people that I don't know. Like it can change my mood on a dime, because, you know, I could be focused doing something and then I'm getting disrupted. And I believe the cell phone is crossing a personal boundary, right? So why would I provide my customers, the people that I care about, the people that I want to build long-term partnerships with an experience that I personally do not appreciate. So I try to avoid those things. And I try to think about like, how do I want to be engaged? What is the feedback that our CISO community has given us? And when you're an early stage company, the thing is, like, the world is your oyster. There's so many accounts, so many customers, so many prospects to potentially go after that, you know, you actually have the opportunity to be selective, and you can reach capacity, you know, talking to a couple hundred accounts until you grow your team. And then, you know, a couple hundred needs to go to 1,000 and then you grow the team, et cetera. But at the earliest stages, what you should be doing, in my opinion, is building those trust-based relationships. And the way to foster those is, you know, get out to the in-person events, get out to get involved in the community. When you have wins, your champions, if they truly are champions, will share those wins with their peers. And, you know, it's, I'll give you an example, just a concrete example, right? A couple of years or about a year ago at Black Hat, I was introduced to a CISO friend in New York City. It was a trusted introduction. We hit it off. We became fast friends at Black Hat. You know, fast forward about 6 months with, you know, a couple hellos in between here and there, I found myself going to New York City and I wanted to arrange a bit of a social event to meet some more folks. I didn't know too many folks out there being a West Coast guy. Mm-hmm. That CISO was courteous enough to invite three of his friends. And so we ended up having six people at this dinner from that one introduction. And subsequently, those other people who were there at the dinner, they also became trusted relationships. Like, we didn't let those go. It wasn't just a transactional, hi, I met you at dinner, we never talked again. We ended up building relationships. And so the next dinner that we held in New York City had 24 people. And once mm-hmm. again, this was largely through peer invitations and recommendations. So if you can provide value and not violate trust, your customers actually go to work for you. Another example, this at Black Hat, we booked a dinner event with no marketing, and initially planned on having six people there. Six grew to eight, grew to 16. So we were like changing our reservation throughout the day. And by the end of the night, we had 40 people at our dinner. But wow. those 40 people were all folks that the CISOs who were coming asked if, can they bring a friend? Can they bring a couple more people? And so, you know, the feeling of the event wasn't like a, you know, it didn't feel transactional. It didn't feel like a marketing event. It felt like a great gathering of peers. Yeah. And that's the kind of experience I like to deliver for my customer.
A few minutes ago, you were talking about sort of SDR structure. And I love the focus on step number one being make your customer a raving fan. And if you can do that, then maybe you provide the infrastructure to help them spread the word. But that's goal number one, right? And then once that's done, you know, the permeation sort of takes care of itself, if you will, or at least becomes a lot easier. There's probably a better way to do it.
I mean, the key thing is to nurture those relationships. You won't believe how many times I've seen sales folks that you can hand them the greatest champion, and that champion may be an executive. And when you have executive champions, they may designate somebody on their team to work with you because right. they're busy. And you won't believe how many times I've seen sales folks get designated down to an engineer and then forget about that relationship with the champion, like literally not call the champion for 6 to 8 months. So the key thing there is don't just develop the relationship, like nurture it, maintain it, actually be sincere about it. Like when I have relationships with my customers, I truly care about them. So just like my friends outside of cyber or outside of work, if I don't hear from them for a couple months, I check in just to make sure that they're good and that things in general are good. I don't need to sell them something. I don't need to make every touch point transactional, but I care about them. So I check in with them. And people forget about that because somehow when they look at their job, they start to think everything's a numbers game. Everything's a transaction. And they forget that it's actually a real person on the other side.
Yeah.
You have to remember they're real people. You have to be empathetic to the things that they're going through. And if you build a relationship, it's not a relationship if it's fake. Like, build a real relationship and then treat it accordingly.
I know one thing that is, you know, sort of a widely discussed topic in cyber, and something you mentioned a few minutes ago was, you know, just sort of the pestering that the limited number of CISOs and security professionals get from, you know, the thousands of cyber vendors that are out there, right? Who are all desperate for 15 minutes of their time. I'm curious, when you think about outbound, right? You mentioned the inbound structure, or, you know, the SDR support structure to, you know, provide, you know, maybe some level of backdrop, right? Or support, backstop, when it comes to, you know, interest from marketing activities. When you work with, you know, either within Dicera or, you know, as an advisor to other cybersecurity startups, how do you advise they do cold outbound, just pure outreach to folks that there's currently no relationship with? Or do you advise they don't do that?
So I think there's a couple layers to it, right? So there are, I try to avoid pure cold outbound. Or what I mean by pure cold outbound is zero context. Your name is on a list, so I'm putting you into some marketing automation trickle campaign, and I'm going to spam you to death until you wake up. Mm-hmm. Or giving a list of names to an SDR and saying, just fire away. Like, I don't believe that's effective. And I think it can do more damage to your brand than it can do good. Now there are vehicles that are out there, that I've used. There are some trusted matchmaking services where there are firms that maintain relationships with technology C-level executives across, you know, 500 different firms. And their whole job is to brief with those executives regularly and bring them up to speed on emerging technologies. So those are great services that you can use to get an initial conversation that comes through a trusted source. Activity, getting out into the field and understanding that it's not just about showing up at RSA or Black Hat, but it's about getting into your local chapters of ISSA or OWASP or whatever it is, your local, you know, for us, Snowflake Data for Breakfast Days, or AWS Community Weeks. There are so many different places where you can go out and actually meet people. And so, you know, if your calendar is empty and you're not out meeting people, then that's an indicator that you're doing something wrong. Yeah. I would go out, I would meet as many people as you can. And then once you start meeting people, it's amazing how the pieces of the puzzle start to fall together. Meaning, you know, you find somebody who you build a relationship or who becomes referenceable, they become a reason for you to reach out to that next target prospect, right? So, you know, I've got a customer in XYZ healthcare organization who solved some very specific problems. So I know another organization that matches the profile very well. I can infer that they probably have very similar challenges, and my customers are comfortable enough and happy enough to either help broker introductions on my behalf, or, you know, if I am gonna reach out to somebody unsolicited, I'll give them a detailed context, and it won't just be a cut and paste message. Yeah. The third part of that equation is partners. So partners also become very, very critical. Partners, you have to treat partners like customers. So back to the relationship thing, right? It's not a one-way relationship. It should be mutually beneficial. You have to invest and spend time with them to stay top of mind and to have their mind share. But if you build those trusted relationship with partners, think of it, for every partner sales rep that you can build a relationship with, yeah, they probably have an account list of 100 or 150 accounts, but I can guarantee you they're in tight with at least 10 to 15. Yeah. So every partner that you can build trust with can bring you into 10 to 15 opportunities. So if you're working a territory, you have three, four different partners that you're really close with. Plus you're building trust and relationships in the local CISO community. Like, you can really navigate and find your way into the conversations you need to from there without violating trust and just going the spam route.
Yeah. How do you advise people get started with that? Because I think, you know, spamming, while it's less than perfect, it's easy, right? Like, it's easy to download one of, you know, like an outreach or, you know, one of the sales automation tools, write a script, download some names from a resource, right, where you can get publicly, you know, at least like available contact information, and then press go. And it might even yield some meetings, right? So for some people getting started, it's seen as kind of an easy way to book some early discovery calls, where investing in partners and all that sort of that philosophy is more time consuming and more difficult. So how do you advise people who maybe don't have that relationship or those relationships or that experience to get started?
Once again, another great question. So just a little background. I'm in my third week of a 7-week stint where I'm doing 4 to 5 days on the road every single week. And last week I was in New York City, riding in a cab with a sales rep, different company than mine, happens to be a peer in the East Coast who is incredibly successful. He's been the top rep at his organization for the last 3 years. And, you know, by the way, there's a little lesson in the fact that I'm riding in a cab with him, because I'm early stage, he's early stage. Just because we're sales folks doesn't mean that we can't help each other, because the space that he operates in is completely different than the space that I operate in. The budgets are completely different budgets, but the buyer persona is very similar. So I go out to New York City, I call him, he brings some people along, I bring some people along, and now suddenly my exposure is much wider. So Everybody can be a partner, whether they're a reseller partner or whether they're just another peer in the industry. But the point is, you have to mobilize them. You have to, like, you know, understand, like, how can you bring them value and how can you get value from them? Fair value in exchange. So anyhow, back to the cab ride and the conversation. He told me that he recently had a BDR, or somebody who had a BDR background, get hired into his company as an AE. And she came up to him with a question. She said, Steve, you've been the top rep here by a huge distance every year for the last 3 years. Like, I want to do that. How do I do it? And his first question to her was, so what's your background? And she said, I'm a BDR. And his answer to her was, the first thing you need to do is unlearn 90% of everything that you've learned so far. And that easy route of automation, like, that I think scales, once again, when you have some level of brand recognition, when people know your company, they know they've heard its name, it's the hot company, they'll see an email and they'll be, you know, more open to responding. But if they've never heard of the brand, they're probably not even going to open the email, right? So once again, you become a little bit of that nuisance in the inbox. The thing about the BDR approach is, if you go take 99 BDRs, go take 100 BDRs and ask them, hey, who from your Rolodex can you call? 99 of them won't even have a single answer. And that's the difference. So the relationship game is a little bit more of a long game.
Yeah.
But if you think about, and you know, for those who are earlier in career in your audience, like, do you want to go to a job, set up some automation, run all that stuff, whatever, and then start over from scratch in the next step in your career, right? Or do you want to build a foundation, a network of champions? And, you know, when I look at that network, I'm not just thinking about prospective buyers and customers. I'm thinking about influencers. I'm thinking about great salespeople. I'm thinking about venture capitalists. I'm thinking about founders, right? And you should operate in a way where you're continuously over time accumulating more valuable people into that network. And over the course of your career, the more valuable your network, the more successful your career is going to be. So if you're treating the customer engagement as just an exercise of pushing out a bunch of numbers but not building real relationships, then you're actually taking your long-term outlook in terms of where you're bringing your career and sacrificing it for the short term.
Yeah. What do you think is driving, you know, sort of the short-term behavior, the behaviors that can be influenced by short-term thinking that's so pervasive in the industry? Is it setting unrealistic growth expectations with investors and then needing to, you know, just show a bunch, like set a bunch of meetings to try to close as much as humanly possible? Or is it like, what do you think is behind the type of behavior that can be perceived as being a nuisance to customers? Because I think most sales teams would say, or would like to say, that, you know, they want to be seen as partners and have trust-based value-added relationships with their customers. But I think very few actually mean it and implement that type of structure.
Yeah. Look, maybe I'm completely off base, because I know that this approach is not necessarily the standard or the norm. But I've also, I've had a great degree of success with this approach. And, you know, what I see happening with this, you know, let's call it, you know, BDR, marketing automation, sales automation, is number one, you know, there's some big companies that took significant investment in the space. And then, you know, of course, their VCs go out and push to all of their portfolio companies that everybody should be using these platforms. And then that starts to create a little bit of a viral effect, right? So there is some push from the VC to use these various platforms. The other thing is, the platforms can simplify kind of the onboarding process of somebody that's super early in career. So if you think about somebody that's maybe just coming out of college, right? Learning all of the nuance to understand how to manage enterprise level relationships, that's something that takes experience. That's something that takes a lot of time, a lot of coaching and mentoring. Learning how to execute on the back of a script and how to do, you know, XYZ marketing automation and just drive to the point where you're getting a meeting, that's a much simpler, like, maturity path. So it's easier to go hire five guys out of college and get them productive running those roles very quickly. So I think that's why a lot of people, you know, might pursue that. Once again, it works better, I think, in the larger organizations. And I have seen a couple places where people have had success, in early stage companies, but I wouldn't say success at scale. I'd mm-hmm. say they ran a BDR program and they happen to find like one or two individuals through that program that are diamonds in the rough or unicorns per se. And they very quickly get promoted to the field and then they're great folks in the field. Yeah. But the majority of the folks that come into that role are just kind of, you know, a little bit robotic in their process.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know we don't have a ton of time left, so let's go ahead and pivot into the rapid fire round, where basic premise is I ask you a few quick questions and you share whatever comes top of mind. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Cool. All right. Well, first question. I know this is your first co-founding or founder experience in being a co-founder and head of go-to-market at Dicera. So what has the experience taught you thus far?
It's hard. It's hard. You know, the sales themselves is challenging when, you know, you're trying to go from obscurity to a recognized brand. But, you know, when you put on that extra hat of co-founder, now suddenly it's not just only about going out and closing deals or building and scaling the sales team, but it's about people. It's about the build out, hiring the right leadership team to mentor and direct the next level of talent. It's, you know, there aren't enough hours in the day for everything. And so, you know, number one piece of advice there is, if you're going to do something super early stage, if you're going to be, you know, take a leap and get in that founder seat, make sure that you have a very strong team with you that has been there before and understands how to scale the critical parts of your business, right? It's very tough to learn on the job. Mm-hmm. So surround yourself with people who have the experience, who have done it before, or at least experts in their domain.
What are your most and least favorite things about information security and the InfoSec industry in general?
So most favorite is the sense of community. So there are definitely groups of folks that look to support each other and hold each other up, and you know, I haven't seen this in other spaces. Like when I was in selling technology for software development tooling, there was nothing like the community that exists in cyber. So I think the community is great. My least favorite thing is probably the amount of noise. And what I mean by that is there are way too many companies. There's a lot of complexity when it comes to security, but because there are so many companies and there's so many nuances between the approaches that all of these companies are taking, number one is it makes it very difficult to understand who does what, and which pieces need to come together well to solve certain problems. And number two is that noise also creates a negative experience for our partners on the buy side. And that experience impacts the entire industry, because this conversation around what is the vendor customer relationship is one that I've seen more often in cyber than I have in any other space. And that's because these people are just getting bombarded and abused.
Yeah.
So that's my least favorite thing.
You said the job of a founder and head of go-to-market is really challenging. What keeps you motivated and what kind of drives you?
There's like this sense of obligation. Like you go and you pick something because you believe that there's a real problem that needs to be solved. And then on the way, as you're sharing that message, as you're evangelizing, as you're also learning from you know, your partners, you get both feedback from them, but also many of them will tell you how passionate they are about that problem being solved as well. Hmm. Right. And so somebody needs to do this. Like this will be a game changer for the industry. And so knowing that, it's not just a personal journey, but also one that will impact people broadly, if you're successful, that kind of pushes you to this, you know, operating model of, you know, failure is not an option. I got too many people. I don't want to let any of them down.
Yeah. Cool. Well, last question, David, if you could go back in time and get a drink with your 20-year-old self, what advice would you give him?
So 20 would have been, 98, 99. So it would have been, don't go out, take all the money that you would spend on everything. Don't buy a car. Don't buy anything. Take all your money and put it in Amazon or Google.
Yeah. That would have been great advice.
Every dollar.
Yeah. Cool. All right, David. Well, I've really enjoyed this, man. Thank you so much for the time. It's taken 65 episodes or so, but this is the first one where we've done just a deep dive on sales and cyber. I loved your perspective. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Very cool. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Joe.